My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to save you some money. My job's not just to entertain you, but to educate you and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Now, here's a question. How many games of dominoes can you play at once? If you're the stock market, you can play three of them at once. And even if they aren't the least bit commonsensical, they can make an enormous difference in the day's action, including today, where while the Dow inched up 42 points, the S&P rose 0.06%, both reaching new all-time highs, the NASDAQ declined 0.08%, and that was a lot of the weakness. What were today's dominoes? Well, we got three of them. Apple, specifically issues with the Apple Watch, but also some concerns that the phone may not be that strong. General Mills and what I regard as a flabbergasting disappointment of an earnings report, and still one more miserable quarter from Bed Bath & Beyond. Let's start with the most visible, the decline in Apple. While there were some rumors of weaker pre-orders, and I have no idea if that's the case, there was another proximate cause that hung around all day, and that's a flaw in the new watch. Apple today revealed a glitch in the new model, which may have a barely noticeable problem making and taking calls in some very isolated instances. I say barely noticeable not because I want to upgrade to the new one from the first iteration glitch. Please note, Lisa, my wife, I'm ready for a new one. But because the vast majority of the press critics never even stumbled on it. The Apple Watch works fine in your home, your work, or out on the street, pretty much wherever your cell phone works. Nonetheless, because I'm always telling you to own the stock of Apple, don't trade it, let me spell out the problem in more detail. If you use the new Apple Watch in a place with an open Wi-Fi network that you visited before, hotel, a Starbucks, good example, you could have some cellular issues, a connectivity problem. To me, that seems like a small issue, and Apple's working on a patch to fix it. But since we all hold this company in such high esteem, it might cause a pause in watch sales. Of course, the watch isn't the iPhone. It's a much less important item to their bottom line. In fact, I doubt you'll even notice any watch sale weakness, if there is any, when the company reports. I feel as strongly about the stock now as I did when back in July of 2010, I came on air and urged people to buy Apple stock after it had taken a five-point hit because of a glitch with the iPhone 4's antenna. Now, you can't see that swoon from $37 to $32 on the chart because Apple's now at $156 and the decline's, well, it's just too tiny to spot without, let's say, a microscope. Suffice to say, though, that after a big run, people want to take profits. And I guess this is as good an excuse as any, especially when you factor in these totally unprovable rumors about weak pre-sales for the new phone from some firm that I've never heard of. Now, let's go back to those dopey dominoes. Apple's got a ton of suppliers. And if Apple's stock catches a cold, these guys get pneumonia. So the stocks of Skyworks Solutions, Qorvo, Cirrus Logic, Texas Instruments, and Broadcom all fall down. Does this make sense? For example, did the stock of Broadcom, which makes so many parts for Apple and for Samsung, and also anyone in telecommunications, really deserve to get pulverized today? I thought the sell-off in Broadcom stock was overdone. But the stock's been trading less like a good semi and more like a jackknife semi of late. So everyone bolts. Will Broadcom even be part of the glitch or the fix? Who knows? As I always say, working with Apple is like the Fight Club. The first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about the Fight Club. My take, if you don't own any of these stocks, I would start picking small at one of them into weakness. You may not get an instant rally, especially if we keep hearing rumors about some sort of weakness in an Apple product line. But you're certainly getting a fabulous price break versus where they were a few weeks ago. And these stocks all get cheaper as they go down. Now, some of you might argue, hey, it's not just the Apple issue. You had a disappointing Adobe report hanging over the market, too. I say give me a break. Adobe blew away the numbers on the top and bottom line and gave you a terrific forecast with one portion of its business outlook a little cloudy because it's taking longer to close some very big deals. Adobe saw up front and honest that I don't even think that they had to talk about the issue. And the vast majority of Wall Street analysts actually raised their price target. Nevertheless, the stock's up 45% for the year. So again, people are looking for an excuse to ring the register, just like with Apple. Personally, I'd be looking to get into the stock lower, not out of it. The second domino that defined today's action, the abysmal figures out of General Mills this morning. Not only did the food company tell you that cereal sales had dropped 7% and U.S. yogurt sales fell double digits, it gave you an overall earnings decline of 9%, something that was sure out of sync with the positive story they told at a conference less than 2 weeks ago. So what falls? The pantry stocks. Kellogg, Kraft Heinz, Campbell Soup, ConAgra, J.M. Smucker, Hershey, you know, the usual suspects. Unlike tech, though, I have no desire to defend these packaged food stocks. The companies are all struggling with headwinds as they've been squeezed by customers like Whole Foods owner Amazon, along with Walmart and Kroger. They aren't exactly loved by millennials, and in many cases, their raw costs are going up while their sales are flatlining or going down. However, the packaged food stocks make excellent dominoes because they're very good at falling. Finally, there's the third domino, retail. Last night, Bed Bath & Beyond reported a number that was beyond the pale. A nightmare that showed it still hasn't figured out how to compete with Amazon. Yeah, I kind of felt badly for them. The original store's right down the block from me. I wouldn't know what to do in their shoes either. But then again, I'm not running the company. So we get dominoes flying here too. Macy's, Kohl's, Target, TJX get hit. You know what else? The cascade even reached CVS and Walgreens, the two major pharmacy chains. Although, to be fair, they're down more than other retailers because of rumors that Amazon's talking about buying a pharmacy benefit manager and cutting out a major source of the profits for the drugstore space. Now, there was a time when I wouldn't let a rumor like this shake me out of an investment. But we've seen what happens when Amazon comes into an industry, or even when we just hear about it coming into an industry. It's wholesale destruction. The stocks of companies like Home Depot and Lowe's got obliterated when Amazon partnered up with ne'er-do-well Sears to sell Kenmore appliances. It was hard to look at the stocks of the do-it-yourself auto parts retailers like AutoZone, O'Reilly Automotive, and Advance Auto Parts when Amazon dipped its toe into their backyard. So you want to take a chance on the drugstores and some news coming out of Amazon? Now, sometimes the whole chain of dominoes gets a push from more than just the industry fundamentals. Today, the Fed announced that it's leaving rates unchanged, but talked about selling bonds and raising rates in the future. The whole thing was actually exactly as expected. Oh, sure, some people thought the statement was too hawkish, but others thought it was too soft. No matter. The whole market got hit after the Fed's 2 o'clock statement came out. Although the banks rallied a bit on the news as investors then anticipated rate hikes that are going to help their numbers. And then the financials led the market right back into the black for another record breaker. So here's the bottom line. When this market gets some bad news after its remarkable run, you have to break out the dominoes to explain the sector decline. I wish I could tell you the game is now done for these given sectors and the damage contained. Usually, though, we get more than one day as analysts come out and start downgrading. I say if you own no tech stocks, take a stab at one of your favorites. But take a pass on the foods and the retailers, because those dominoes actually deserve to fall. Now I speak to Carlos in Florida. Carlos!
Kramer, what's popping, bro?
Not much. How about with you?
Everything's good, man. Hey, shout out to your boy, Alshon Jeffrey. 22 fantasy points in my Yahoo League.
Yeah, and I didn't take them because I'm so afraid to go double down on the Eagles if they lose. Yeah, Alshon's fabulous. How can I help?
Okay, so let's talk Match Group. A year ago, you said it was a good but risky stock. Mm-hmm. Now, since its IPO, it went up 74%. The 50-day moving average is higher than the 200-day moving average. Do you still think it's risky?
You remember, it's risky, but I like it. I like the Interactive. You know, this is the parent, but Match is a good company, and we liked it early on. I don't think you should sell the stock. It's a great long-term buy. Let's go to Wayne in Georgia, please. Wayne.
Commander Kramer, sir. How are you?
I am good. Oh, I like being a commander. What's happening? What am I commanding? But go ahead.
I am giving you a double booyah, one from the ATL and from Jersey. Jim, my family's from Summit, and I grew up in Berkeley Heights, man.
You rock! How can I help?
Yeah. Listen, my stock today is MDXG. Today it took a Floyd Mayweather beatdown, but I've been in the stock since $7. CEO Pete Pettit has sold companies before. Do you think there may be a potential buyout in the future.
No, you know, that there's some articles that came out that the company's unhappy with. There's two ways to approach this. One is we look at the articles and we find out ourselves whether they're good ones. Second, we invite the company on to explain themselves and say why the articles are negative and wrong. That's the best way to approach it. So I am telling MDXG, my medics, they should come on the show. How about Dennis in Michigan? Dennis.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Dennis.
MGM is dominating Las Vegas, has casinos in various cities throughout the United States, and is in Macau. Also, there's MGP Growth Properties with a dividend of over 5%. Your thoughts on both?
Jeez, I like both. You know, what can I say? Steve Wynn is so great. I think the world of Jim Murren, the MGM Growth Properties is a terrific real estate investment trust. I didn't know it had fallen back to 5%. I think that you're not going to go wrong with either one of these. They're both good. Oh, Domino. I've been telling you for days now that a decline is bound to happen after such a big run. Some of the Domino declines make sense to me, and it might not be over. Oh, Mad Money tonight. Both the stock and dog NVIDIA have had a great 2017, although the stock is really rolling over tonight. Should you look before you leap when it comes to owning the shares? I'm going off the charts to find out. Then FedEx plunged in after-hours trading yesterday. But with the stock rising today, could the company deliver profits? And amid heightened cybersecurity concerns, Mimecast has been headed higher. Could the company's uptrend continue? I'm talking with the CEO. So stick with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
With the stock of NVIDIA, now that this very evening is struggling because rival Advanced Micro Devices is reported to be working with Tesla on an autonomous driving chip that may be competing with or even replacing an NVIDIA semiconductor. The stock's been a huge win. It just gained a quick 16 points in the last week before succumbing to this AMD news in after hours. Company has a fabulous position in chips for graphics, for the data center, for autonomous driving, and for artificial intelligence. It's the semiconductor stock of the future, and I even renamed my dog Everest after it, just to show the market's going nuts about the darn thing. After tonight's decline, he could be back to his Everest moniker. That said, up here with NVIDIA stock down big in after hours after this long run, we got to ask what to do. Perhaps after its rally in this AMD news, the stock actually deserves to get punished. Perhaps this is just one more buying opportunity, though. When you have something that you're not sure about, I think it's important to consider many different perspectives here, even as we own it for my charitable trust, because NVIDIA is the hottest stock around. And as I've been saying pretty regularly, many people own NVIDIA stock simply because it's been going up. So if anything goes wrong, even a little bit, like this Tesla AMD potential tie-up, your fellow shareholders could turn on you in a heartbeat. So you have to know what you're doing and what could happen to the stock. So we need more insight here, which is why we're going off the charts with the help of Carolyn Brodin, the brilliant technician who runs the FibonacciQueen.com. That's a website, and also happens to be one of my colleagues at RealMoney.com, to get a better sense of where NVIDIA might be headed. Well, because, look, she's got a great record on this. 5 weeks ago, I asked her to take a look at some semiconductor stocks, including NVIDIA, and she totally nailed it. At the time, the stock was trading at 166 and was in the process of rebounding from a dramatic sell-off. Check out the daily chart. Brodin told us that the sell-off would be erased rapidly. It was really a pretty amazing call. Sell-off would be erased rapidly, and the rally could be far from over. She pointed out that the stock's recent low was made on top of a key cluster of support levels running from 151 to 152, and she also argued that the timing is right for the stock to resume its long march higher. More on that later. Crucially, Brodin told us that she could see the stock of NVIDIA trading to 180 or even 188 before it would hit a real ceiling of resistance. Well, the stock blew through that 180 target last Friday, only a month after we last heard from Brodin, and it even briefly broke out above the 188 price that she's using earlier this week. In short, She couldn't have been more right, which is why, with this AMD news, we got to go back to her. Given that NVIDIA's already hit Broad's initial price target, what does she think you should do with it now? Okay, remember, Broden uses Fibonacci ratios. That's a series of numbers discovered by the medieval godfather of mathematics, Leonardo Fibonacci. And they pop up over and over again in nature, seashells, pine cones. And for some inexplicable reason, she has told us time and again, and it's been demonstrated that they pop up in the stock market. She measures past swings in a stock, then runs those swings through the prism of these Fibonacci ratios to find crucial support and resistance levels, where a stock is likely to change its trajectory. In other words, find it before it happens. And it's not just price, by the way, the y-axis of the charts. Broden also looks at time on the x-axis and runs it through the same prism to find important dates where there's a higher probability that a stock is about to change course. These are the two axes. Last month, her methodology indicated that it was time to buy NVIDIA. Both the timing and the price were exactly right. But Broden can use these same Fibonacci relationships to predict when a rally is more likely to come to an end, meaning she can help you figure out when we might be approaching a better moment to sell or to buy, frankly. So how does this apply to NVIDIA? While Broden thinks the stock could still have some upside, remember, she's still using a 209 target, she thinks it's important to use her methodology to predict where we're likely to run into resistance, just in case the rally runs out of steam, as it seems to be doing this very evening. Let me give you a recent example how all of this works away from NVIDIA, which is a highly emotionally charged name. Take a look at the daily chart of the XLE. This is a stock that is an energy ETF. Because everyone was bailing on the oil stocks, the XLE, this is a mirror image, by the way, of NVIDIA, the XLE was trending very bearish going into late August. But using this chart, Broden was able to anticipate both where and when the XLE was likely to bottom. How'd she do it? Okay, there were three factors. First, many market moves tend to terminate at extensions of prior swings. In other words, you take a past decline and then you run it through the Fibonacci sequence. For the XLE, Broden noticed that it hit a 127.2% extension of its prior down move. That made a bottom more likely. Second, she also looked at the duration of previous declines, the time it took for the declines to play out. With the XLE, these past declines had lasted from 16 to 20 trading days. Sure enough, when the ETF ultimately bottomed, it came just 16 days after its previous high. Third, she also noticed some price symmetry in previous down moves. There were two previous declines that lasted for $5.28 and $5.66. When the XLE bottomed in August, it had come down $5.33 from its previous high. It fit the pattern. So when the XLE tested all these key parameters on August 21, well, the stock bottomed. Broden couldn't be 100% sure that the stock would change course at that level, but she was able to anticipate the possibility by observing and analyzing the ETF's past behavior. And she wants to use the same tools to make sense of what's happening with NVIDIA. So in other words, we see how this worked, we see how she called a bottom, and now we're going to apply all this to the stock of NVIDIA. With that in mind, take a gander at this new daily chart of the semiconductor company. Unfortunately, Broden says she's observed some similarities to the reversal she caught in the XLE. First, NVIDIA has already made a 127.2 extension of its previous swing. Remember, many moves like the XLE's decline terminate at this Fibonacci level, even if it's only temporary. In a bull market, Broden says that rallies tend to terminate at extensions, Fibonacci levels that are larger than the previous swing. That means a pullback in NVIDIA has now become more likely. Second, there's the issue of time. In the recent past, NVIDIA's longest rallies have lasted for 25 or 29 days, trading days, before the stock got hit with a typical correction. This recent rally, it's lasted for 25 trading days, going to the high on Monday. And the pullback may have already started, considering the negative action in NVIDIA's stock tonight. In short, this leg of the rally may finally have run out of room and time. Third, looking at some of the larger rallies over the past year, Broden's noticed that the stock has a tendency to run out of steam after it's climbed anywhere from 35 to 42 points. In the past, whenever we got a move this big in NVIDIA, it was followed by a corrective decline, and that decline's worth anywhere from $10 to just under $30 before the rally resumed again. This doesn't mean they will definitely see a similar down pattern here, but it's certainly worth acknowledging. From the August 11th low to the high on Monday, NVIDIA gained $38.29. That's right in the spot of when these rallies tend to terminate. We got to take this seriously. In short, Broden thinks this might be a smart moment to take some profits in NVIDIA. If the stock continues to behave like it's done all year, then it could be due for a meaningful decline here, even bigger than what's occurring this evening. And now, if you don't own NVIDIA, if Broden's right, you could be about to get an excellent buying opportunity. If the pattern she's looking at holds true, it might be a good idea to circle back to this one next week at a potentially lower level. After we see that we have these declines, this could be one of them. Here's the bottom line. I like NVIDIA, but I love protecting your profits even more. Now, my Chabot Trust, which you can follow along if you join the ActionAlertsPlus.com club, isn't going to take any action, not going to trade in and out. I actually want to get bigger, not smaller, in the stock of NVIDIA when it comes down more than it has. The charts, as interpreted by Kyle and Baroden, suggest that NVIDIA could be due for a $10 to $30 pullback after its recent run. And if you're nimble, maybe you want to try to sidestep some of that decline. More important, if NVIDIA is pulverized like that, well, maybe you get a chance to own a piece of this great semiconductor company with a remarkable number of strengths and very few weaknesses, even as this potential loss of the Tesla business to AMD could certainly be one of them. Much more Mad Money ahead, including my take on FedEx's earnings. The company can deliver a package to your door on time, but can it deliver profits? I'm going to give you my take. Then, the Equifax hack has many consumers on edge, with 143 million people potentially impacted. I'm talking to a major player in the cybersecurity space to see if it can continue to protect your information and your portfolio. And can the sharing economy take advantage of the humanization of pets trend? I'm talking to one startup trying to do just that. Stick with Cramer. When a high-quality stock gives you a momentary pullback, there are times when you just need to grab that opportunity by the horns and do some buying. And that's what people did last night and this very morning when the stock of FedEx was down more than $3 on what was widely seen as a disappointing quarter. It was a terrific moment to buy. And it was no wonder that the stock of FedEx finished up more than $4 today. You see, there was actually no disappointment. If anything, there was tremendous exuberance. But you had to listen to the conference call, as I always recommend, and not just read the negative headlines in order to profit from and not panic the opportunity. FedEx is generally regarded as a tremendous play on global trade. I put it on par with Boeing and Caterpillar. The difference? Boeing stock is up 64% for the year. Caterpillar has gained 35%. FedEx is only up about half as much as the latter. Why is that? Well, it's all about the hack. FedEx's European division was hacked, and it cost the company a lot of money this quarter, $300 million, or 79 cents a share. It was a massive intrusion that involved state-sponsored cyber terrorism. Unlike, say, Equifax, FedEx went above and beyond to flag every aspect of the problem, and I think it scared people into believing that maybe the earnings were permanently impaired or that business might have been lost for good because of the breach. In fact, I think the hack managed to obscure a lot of the progress FedEx has made with TNT, the European business it acquired at what now looks like trough of economic activity, bargain basement prices, $4.8 billion. It's kept people from recognizing how amazing this deal is, and it's kept them out of the stock ever since the hackers struck back on June 27th. But the hack finally seemed to be behind them, and now that investors can focus on the future, the stock managed to roar back with a vengeance today. What drove these buyers? Simple. FedEx made it clear that if it weren't for the hack, they could have reiterated their guidance, letting us know that no business was lost because of the data breach. Meanwhile, the companies put through huge price increases in many lines of shipping that will ultimately and undoubtedly stick. They're expanding the way people can drop off packages, including a hookup with 8,000 Walgreens that they can use as FedEx retail depots. And they're instituting some major limits on some sizes of packages that should make the holiday season a lot more lucrative. Most important, FedEx benefits from a robust global economy, where e-commerce from brick-and-mortar retailers is growing like a weed. One of the execs on the conference call a fellow by the name of Rajesh Subramaniam told us, and I quote, "We are seeing the best year for global trade in years." Later on in the call, he went on to say, "This is the fastest freight growth I have seen since 2011. The trade growth is 1.4 times GDP for the first half of this calendar year, and it's typically been roughly GDP for the last few years." So what's driving it? This is a continued quote. "The manufacturing, especially in the technology sector, is the key driver of this trend for the year," end quote. On top of that, Fred Smith, the company's revered founder, chairman, and CEO, gave an unbelievably positive long-term outlook for the business based on the wealth effect globally. In fact, having a major impact on worldwide growth, which has put e-commerce on steroids. In other words, he's saying that the middle classification of the entire globe is making e-commerce strong. Anything that's good for e-commerce is good for FedEx, since all this stuff needs to be shipped. In the end, regardless of the hack, this company's doing incredibly well, and it's the logical play on worldwide growth. That's why I think that if it can earn, say, $15 next calendar year, and I think that's a distinct possibility, you could see the stock rally 50 points, 5-0, from these levels. Yep, even after FedEx's run today and that amazing reversal, I think it's got a lot more upside. Let's go to Elliot in New York. Elliot.
Hey, Jim, I just want to say it's an honor.
Thank you.
And I'd love to shout out to my friend Alan, who's been holding on to QQQ since he's been trading in the low 40s.
All right.
I have a two-part question.
Okay.
One, would Symantec be a good pick in the cybersecurity field? And two, do you prefer HAC or CIBR for cybersecurity?
I don't like ETFs. I like to pick the best. Is Symantec the best? Palo Alto had the best quarter, maybe Proofpoint. But Symantec is doing very well, and I'm certainly not against owning. You know the power of e-commerce, especially on steroids. And anything that grows with it is in the wheelhouse of FedEx. Take the price break. Well, certainly people did today. There's much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with Mimecast. The internet is making us more connected, but it's also increasing the risk of cyber attacks. The threat is real, but I'll see if the company could keep you secure. Then looking for a new furry friend? I'm eyeing a fresh-faced company that's banking on the pet trend. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. So stick with Cramer.
Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
What are you looking at? I'm right here.
I'm sorry. I'm looking past you.
There's some quotes.
There's a lot of tourists.
There's nothing behind me.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Thanks to the awful Equifax hack, cybersecurity is back on the front pages. And however brutal this turns out to be for Equifax, to say nothing of the millions of people whose social security numbers have been stolen, you better believe this is going to be a huge boom for the cybersecurity industry. Many of these stocks, they've caught fire here. Because what board of directors wants to be caught napping on the job with data security after the Equifax debacle? Take Mimecast, that's M-I-M-E for you home gamers. It's a provider of cloud security and risk management services for corporate information with a particular focus on protecting email. Mime stock, it's rallied a lot. It's up more than 50% this year. And that's after nearly doubling in 2016. All told, the darn thing has given you a remarkable 175% rally since the stock came public in November 2015. In short, it has been a home run. Question is, can it continue to roar? Let's take a closer look with Peter Bauer, the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of Mimecast, to find out more about his company and its prospects. Mr. Bauer, welcome to Mad Money. Good to see you, sir. Have a seat.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. All right, first, I always think that this market is saturated, and then we find out how few companies have really taken care of business. Where do you think we are in the evolution of trying to stop cybersecurity and also in email security?
Well, Jim, I think it's a never-ending story because as we innovate and develop more and more digital technologies that the world becomes reliant on, so vulnerabilities happen right behind them as technology changes. And there's a large number of adversaries really interested in profiteering or sabotaging organizations digitally.
Now, if I hire Mimecast, like a major aerospace company did, because they had several divisions and they were dueling it out about who's the best. And I'm the top guy at that aerospace company. Do I say I want to protect my employees who might click on the wrong link and then hurt themselves? Or am I trying to protect the organization itself?
Well, I think they're both linked, because particularly with email security, attackers have figured out that the human sitting behind the computer is one of the weakest links. And what an attacker is really interested in is, can they get hold of credentials? Could they deploy malware on that person's machine? Or could they get their help or cooperation in some way in launching an attack?
Okay, well, this is, brings me to Equifax. See, now, if they have my social, I'm pretty sure that they have my social security number, and they have my address, because I applied for a loan. They have my age. They have, I don't know if they have my passwords, but they have a lot. Well, I mean, if someone sends me an email that says, listen, you know, you've got to attend to this immediately, and it has all my information, how do I know that's not real?
Well, that's really tricky to figure out, and it takes a trained eye, and so employee education is really important. But what technology can do is it can really examine emails that are coming into organizations and look very precisely at what might indicate an impersonation is taking place, what might look like a fraud. And that's really where Mimecast comes in, and a huge amount of our work is around building the technology to make email safer for business.
Have you been able, has any board of directors asked you to speak to them?
We talk to management teams at companies every single day.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask that is because I think after Equifax, I would probably want to have a big company that has real data breach issues where the enterprise could be at stake. I think it's time to bring guys like you into the boardroom. We can't just have it. So it's a chief, some chief officer that's not the CEO. It's too dangerous.
It really does raise the issue of how seriously our boards take cybersecurity.
Okay, thank you. Because I want to know why they don't take it more seriously. Is it because they're not fired? Is it because they're somehow protected? I mean, I'm looking at you and I'm thinking to myself, what makes me want to call you if I don't have any penalty? If I don't?
Absolutely. And with new regulations like GDPR, for example, coming through in Europe, the size of the penalties to organizations is really significant. And so I think that this is really raising the visibility for boards around cybersecurity.
Okay, now in your conference call, you talked about a spike that comes from the end of life of Intel, not be supporting the McAfee product, which we know Proofpoint, because they've been on our show a number of times, was the provider that they suggested you go to. But you've gotten a lot of business from the end of that, too. You said that this may be a short-term spike. Is Wall Street or investors prepared that it may that your business may go down from that?
We've benefited terrifically from the McAfee end of life. We've got hundreds of new logos on board. We've won a significant number of new partner accounts as well. I think what we said in our prior fiscal year that ended March was that 10 to 20% of our new business came from those McAfee customers.
Right. But, you know, that made me worry that perhaps people don't understand that that's going to run out.
Well, there's a terrific opportunity ahead in terms of cross-selling those customers additional products from our fabulous portfolio of products inside our suite.
Now, have you been able to go? Look, I mentioned Proofpoint. I mean, they're up. You guys, tell me why I should go with Mimecast versus Proofpoint, because we've had them on, and they are a pretty terrific company.
So
give me the pitch. It's the first time you've been on.
So Mimecast really focuses on solving these complex problems for what we would think of as the 99% of companies. So many of our competitors are focused on the megacorps, the really large organizations, mm-hmm. and are underserving that mid-market. So, Jim, about over 75% of our revenue is actually done with organizations between 100 and 10,000 people.
I see. Okay. The reason I say that is because you've got at the top, Office 365, a major hotel chain, but right, that's 5,400 players, but an energy company with 14,000. So you're getting some big business now.
We certainly are being drawn into some opportunities with pretty large organizations. And we have some special things that we can help certain types of large organizations achieve, which we think is unique compared to our competitors.
Okay, one last. Just tell our viewers, what are some things that look obvious to you that don't look obvious to them that they shouldn't click on?
Well, I think when one looks at the domain names and when organizations are receiving or when people are receiving emails, have a very close look at the address that the message is actually coming from.
Okay.
Because we see a lot of what one would call typo squatting, where domains have been registered that look quite similar to
right.
a domain that you would expect, but it's actually not coming from the organization.
And we should, what, just a little bit of an inversion or something?
So, for example, we've seen Mimecast spelt
right.
with an R and an N, which next to each other, to a person without their spectacles on, looks a lot like an M.
All right, that's great advice. Everybody needs it these days. I want to thank Peter Bauer, co-founder and CEO of Mimecast. It's been a red-hot stock. Well, why not? I mean, we've got a red-hot problem on our hands with all sorts of cybersecurity. Thank you so much, Peter. Good to
Thanks,
talk
Jim.
To you. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Rain us out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? It's time for the lightning round. Let's go to Mario in New Jersey. Mario.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Greetings from the beautiful Watchung Mountain.
Oh, I do love it there. What's up?
Nothing much. I want to talk about a little stock that I bought about a year ago. I'm 80% up on it. I want to know if I should cash out or not. Ring the cash register.
Okay.
STM.
ST Micro is a very good company, and I like the semiconductors a lot. Nothing wrong with taking a little profit or a little, though, and letting the rest rot. Let's go to James in North Carolina. James.
Booyah, Jimmy. How you doing?
I am good. How about you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been trying to get with you for 8 years, but today finally I got you.
All right. What's
yeah,
the stock?
Jimmy, how do I go about this one? ICPT.
Okay, very speculative stock. Speculative biotech. That's got some good publicity in the last few days. I don't know why the stock's getting hammered, but it's as long as you're really willing to deal with the speculation of it, take a look at some of the recent articles. They're positive. Let's go to Bill in New Jersey. Bill.
Hey, Jim, number one, I have to say thanks for the 50K of gains that I'm sitting on that have your fingerprints all over it.
You're very kind. Thank you so much.
Jim, I'm calling about Mo Altria with a thesis. I'm accumulating Mo, waiting for the inevitable federal legalization of weed. A 4%+ dividend keeps me happy to wait. Does my thesis hold water?
No, you want to own this for the dividend and the fact that it just has really good gross margins. But I'm not going to endorse it for a pot story. It just doesn't make sense to me. I like the company longer term. I don't recommend any tobacco stocks, but I do like it. Let's go to Vincent in California. Vincent.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I am good. How about you?
Great, great. I'd like to hear your opinion on ARRY, RA Biopharmaceutical.
It just raised a lot of money to be able to expand its portfolio. I think there's a bunch of positive research about it. Makes me feel like it's a very good speculation. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Every year, 7.5 million pets are given up to shelters. But more than 2 million could be saved by connecting animal lovers to each other. Can this company make a business offering you a better way to get your pet?
Let's talk about one of the strongest, most consistent themes around, the humanization of pets. Every year, Americans spend more money on their cats and dogs. We treat them like our children, except they're less likely to give you back talk or ask you for money, even as they're more likely to use the corner of your living room as a convenient lavatory. Unfortunately, there is a sad flip side to the rise in pet ownership. Not everyone can properly care for a dog or even a cat. Maybe you get a new job with longer hours. Maybe you have to move and your new apartment doesn't allow pets. Maybe you get sick. For whatever reason, millions of people have to give up their pets every year. Now, nobody actually wants their pet to go to a shelter, and that's where Get Your Pet comes in. For a $10 fee, you can list your animal on Get Your Pet's platform, although at the moment they're temporarily waiving that fee. If you're looking to adopt an animal, the full adoption package costs only $99. All told, it's maybe half to a third of what you'd have to pay at a shelter, even as Get Your Pet still donates a portion of the proceeds to local animal shelters. I think doing a good thing, kind of a match.com for pets and potential owners. Earlier, I got a chance to speak with Angela Marcus, Get Your Pet's co-founder and pet lover in chief. Angela, I'm a rescue dog, rescue cat kind of guy, and I always feel that if you don't rescue, I have a sense of what happens at these shelters. What does Get Your Pet do about that?
Get Your Pet is an online opportunity for someone who needs to find a home for their pet to connect directly with someone who is interested in adopting a pet. So instead of taking your pet to a shelter and surrendering them there, you actually can meet and message with potential adopters and find a home for your pet that way.
Now, we know that people who run shelters are terrific, but sure. We also know that they're resource constrained. So will the shelters work with Get Your Pet?
Absolutely. We have many shelter partners, and they're really excited about GetYourPet.com. The reason is because there's no shelter out there that has enough space to care for all the pets that are coming in.
Now, how does Get Your Pet possibility can become profitable, given the fact that there are millions of pet owners and people care more about their pets than they treat their pets sometimes better than their own kids?
Certainly. And we're really thankful. And as you know, the pet industry is just continuing to grow. Everyone is treating their pets like family members. So right. We do hope that at some point Get Your Pet will get to a point where it's profitable. But right now we're a startup and we're trying to just get the word out.
OK, so how does someone if someone is thinking about putting their pet up to a shelter, what would they do with Get Your Pets to avoid that?
So very simply, they would visit us at GetYourPet.com, and they would create their pet's profile on our site. They answer a couple questions about their pet. They can upload a few pictures, even a video, and then they can begin messaging with potential adopters. So instead of surrendering their pet to a shelter, they have a peace of mind knowing where their pet is going to end up.
Now, what is the scalability here, and what is the moat? In other words, how big can this be, and why couldn't I do also GetYourPet.com?
Sure. So the scalability, obviously, we just expanded nationwide in June of this year. So because we're not a bricks and mortar business, we have the opportunity to help a lot of people and a lot of pets all across the country. And certainly other people could do this. I mean, mm-hmm. There's nothing stopping anyone from doing it. But we got here first, and we hope that we can use this model to help a lot of people and a lot of pets.
And how do you make your money?
We make our money right now by our $99 adoption fee. That is paid by the adopters on our site, and it includes a whole bunch of stuff in our adoption package, including a vet visit, 30 days of pet insurance, and a whole bunch of coupons from our industry partners. But as we grow, and we are growing very quick, we're going to explore opportunities with advertising and other brand extensions with services and products.
I have to ask you this. What are the percentage of animals do get euthanized at shelters?
The generally accepted average right now is 1 out of every 2 pets entering the shelter system.
1 out of every 2 that you think are going to be adopted are therefore, let's put it nicely, are not adopted, but are.
Well, and you know, there's 7.5 million pets entering our shelter system right now in our country. I was the operations director for the Pennsylvania SPCA for 6 years. I can tell you firsthand, shelters are no place for pets, for people who care about their pets. And out of that 7.5 million, 2.5 are being surrendered by their owners. And that's how we came up with GetYourPet.com.
Now, if people were to leave, how often do people leave and they leave their animal? I think they're cruel, but other people might just say they just don't know what to do.
Well, and, you know, there hasn't been an option until GetYourPet.com.
Right.
So there's a lot of judgment around surrendering a pet to a shelter, and we're here to change that. So shelters are always going to have a place in our society. We're always going to need someone to care for stray animals or victims of cruelty and neglect. But a pet that has been loved and cared for and someone's life has changed for whatever reason, we want to give them an opportunity to do right by their pet.
So can the National SPCA, will they post pictures on their own Get Your Pet? Is that something you want?
Well, no, because there's already platforms out there.
Right.
There's platforms that have shelter pets listed on the site, but our model is really different because when you're looking at one of those sites that have shelter pets already, the pet's already been exposed to illness, the pet's already been exposed to stress and all of the stuff that is in a shelter, and we're really focused on home-to-home pet adoption.
And make sure the pet is healthy. If I were to go to your site, you would have a certificate of health?
That's right. In every adoption package, you get a veterinary voucher, so you can visit any one of our Get Your Pet participating veterinarians. We have industry partners with Veterinary Centers of America, Banfield Pet Hospitals, hospitals all across the country, and you also get 30 days of pet insurance and a bunch of money-saving coupons with Pet Value Pet Stores.
Well, as a pet lover, I think that you're doing great things, and I hope you make money, because therefore I think that you'll expand, and maybe we cut down on the number of euthanized pets, which is a huge thing in our society.
Absolutely.
It's Angela Marcus. She's the co-founder and pet lover-in-chief
of GetYourPet.com. Stick with Kramer. Thank you, Angela. From the looks of things after hours, Callum Broden, our chartist, is going to be right. NVIDIA's coming in. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. Happy New Year. See you tomorrow.